Good evening. I have been very lucky because for most of my life I've been very, very healthy. No major illnesses, no diseases, no complaints. Even now, pretty good. So I've been very lucky that way. But when I was very young, as an infant, there was not that way. I was always sick as a child. Always getting something bad. Often it was not so good, those childhood illnesses. And, of course, the treatment was some kind of awful medicine, always. Foul-tasting medicine. And so the suffering I had as a child was twofold, you know. There was the illness, which make you feel terrible, and then there was the medicine, which make you feel sick again. And the doctor used to say, "This is good for you." And my mother made me swallow it, and she would say, "This is good for you." So, didn't seem like it, but I had to trust what they said, you know. Couldn't speak up. Too young, too sick. I had to trust what the doctor said and what she said, but these medicines made my whole body feel awful, I remember. And so when I first came to practice here, and we had retreats, or sesshin, I used to think the sesshin was like that. It's very bad tasting, but it's good for you. Make you better. But let me quickly say that's not the meaning of sesshin. Maybe it's good for you, but we don't do sesshin because we think it's going to be good for us. But it is easy to misunderstand the meaning of a retreat when we first start. We should recognize that a sesshin is not like a purgative, you know, to clean you out. And it's also not some kind of ascetic ordeal to clean us out. Sesshin is not that way. Or it's not like what the young people in the 60s used to say, to get the toxins out. There was a well-used phrase in the 60s, we have to eat this food or drink this juice or something to get the toxins out. So sesshin is not like that, to clean us out. And sesshin is also, it's not some kind of alchemy that will change us, transform us into something precious, some precious jewel or some precious metal. This sesshin that's not the point. But it's easy to misunderstand it, the sesshin, when we first start. Also, in addition, sesshin is not about solving our problems. I used to think, well, we'll go to this 1 week retreat and all worries go away. No more problems after retreat. And sesshin is not intended to make us be a better person, whatever that means, you know. Retreat, meditation retreat is not about changing our personality. Rather, a sesshin is an opportunity to express our unlimited self, to express our big self, and to acknowledge and find our inherent freedom. What Suzuki Roshi used to refer to as our inmost desire. For years I wondered what he meant. This practice is to satisfy your inmost desire. I wondered what that was exactly. He's referring to our inherent unlimited freedom. And the problem that we human beings have, why we create so many problems, is because we don't appreciate our inherent freedom. We're asleep to our inherent freedom. In our in daily life, in our ordinary daily life, we feel limited by many things. In our present situations, in our immediate situations, there's our own physical being makes us feel limited. Our own senses. We try to lift something and it's too heavy, so we feel limited by lack of strength. And if you go and get your driver's license, which I did recently, and somebody says, "Put your hand over your right eye and read the bottom line on that chart," you can't do it. Okay, read the line above that. Oh, okay. See, you feel I'm limited. I can't do that. Somebody can do that because it's there, but I can't. So in very subtle ways, our physical situation and our senses are constantly reminding us very subtly that we have some limitations. And the culture we live in, the society we live in, puts constraints on us. We have to put limits on what we can do so that we can live in harmony. So there are various rules of how to behave in the world. And so we know there are limitations that way. And, of course, there are the demands and responsibilities we have from our family situation, our work, or our school. There's limitations on how we can live our life and what we can do. And so we feel that. We feel we are a limited being. In addition to that, our personal history, our past experiences can bring limitations to our life. We have been trained and learned and have learned to believe and behave in particular ways, certain ways that our elders tell us and our society has told us. You have to live this way, and we feel we have to continue those beliefs and those behaviors. It's part of being here. So with all these various ways of being limited in what we can do in our life, with all these limitations, we come to feel that we cannot feel our inherent freedom. It seems like a fiction. Inherent freedom, and yet we feel all these constraints. And this is a fundamental difficulty for people. We live our life not realizing our inherent freedom. And that's what our practice is about. Finding our inherent freedom. To see, to feel beyond the limitations that are imposed on us by our everyday life, our own physical situation, and what society asks us to do, and our own personal history. So our practice is about understanding the true nature of freedom, our inherent freedom. And this is why we have Sesshin. The usual feeling is that when we feel some limitation in our life, or something, we feel something is holding us back. We feel, well, if I get rid of this limitation, I'll be free. Just let me get past this limitation. So, for example, we might say, what I need is a new boss. What I need is a different job. What I need is a new boyfriend, new girlfriend. What I need is to get rid of this task, or what I need is more money. This is the usual way of thinking. Get past this or these limitations, and I will feel free. But of course, it doesn't work like that. It doesn't work like that. So striving or believing that ridding ourselves of everyday limitations will free us, this is not the way to resolve our fundamental difficulty. It's a misunderstanding to think that way, because we're solving the wrong problem. When we don't feel our inherent freedom, we are placing the blame on these things we call limitations. The boss, the job, the boyfriend, you know, the situation. We're placing the blame on those limitations. But that way is looking at our life with our head down. In other words, looking at life with a very short view. You know the statue of the thinker? You know, like this? He's thinking too much with his head down. He can't see the world. His head is down. We should look at life with a long view. In this way, head up, back straight. Seeing life with a long view, not a short view. If we blame limitations that we feel have been put on us because of our own personal situation or situation around us, when we blame the limitation, we cannot find our freedom. That is a misunderstanding. There is nothing, there is no limitation on our inherent freedom. Despite difficulties, despite constraints, despite our physical situation, our mental situation, or historical situation, no limitation takes away our inherent freedom. And the problem is that when we feel we are limited, when we feel our freedom is limited, that creates a discriminating mind. The mind isn't free. And we tend to judge things and blame things or people for our difficulties when we don't know about our freedom. And we stay trapped. Human beings, we stay trapped in that cycle of judging. And we will continue our habits over and over. And when we have developed a discriminating mind, which we are warned not to do, when we develop a discriminating mind, we will not look at ourselves carefully. And we will keep ourselves trapped. So our Zazen practice, or in our Zazen practice, little by little, we let go of discriminating mind and judging mind. In Zazen, we don't think about anything. And we don't analyze anything, and we don't judge anything. We just allow the mind to be itself without limitation, without feeling limited. When we can do that, we can start to feel our inherent freedom. When our mind can let go of its tendency to judge and discriminate, we can start to feel our freedom, inherent freedom. And we know that's happening when we no longer feel limited by our everyday limitations. Like what we can't lift because our arms aren't that strong, what we can't see because our eyes aren't that powerful. When we start to feel our inherent freedom, we won't feel limited by those everyday limitations. And we will notice that our mind doesn't blame or judge as much as it used to. That's freedom. So Zazen is about accepting our fundamental difficulties or limitations. Zazen is not about solving some temporary problem. In our practice, we don't judge everyday situations as limitations. No matter how the job is going, no matter how the traffic is going, no matter what our girlfriend or boyfriend said to us, we don't judge these things as limitations. They're just things that happen. And we don't allow them to feel that we are limited. So our practice, our Zazen practice, is about letting go of these limitations to our freedom. Accepting and recognizing our fundamental problem is not so easy. It requires determination and some courage. Bodhisattva attitude. It requires a mind of practice. And that's why we organize sesshin. Retreat, to give ourselves an opportunity to see what is going on with us and to let go of these limitations. In one of Dogen's talks, in one of his writings, he says something like, if something falls to the ground, it will surely arise. And another way to think of that, or another way to say that is, when you fall down, when you fall to the ground, you must arise from the ground. You have no choice. When you fall down, you must arise. And when we study ourselves and we accept ourselves, we will understand this point. We will understand the deep meaning of this teaching. And all of our confusion will be resolved. And later in that writing, Dogen explained. He said, if you are asked, how can we accomplish the Buddha way? You should answer, it is like arising from the earth after you have fallen. But this is not difficult to understand. We know that if we were to stumble and fall, we don't stay on the ground. We don't stay there. How do we get up? With what kind of attitude do we get up? Do we blame anyone or anything because we tripped and fell? Who do we blame? Who's there to blame? Do you blame the ground when you find yourself on the ground? Do you blame the sidewalk or the stone that you tripped on? Our question is, how shall I arise? We can arise from the ground after we have fallen only by standing on the ground. No other place to stand. And the ground itself is, you know, our true nature, the world of Buddha. It is impossible to rise up from the ground without relying on the ground. To stand up, we put our feet on the ground, right where we have fallen. If you fall in this place, this is where you stand up. This is our practice. In the midst of our situation, we stand up. Our situation includes our doubts, our confusions, our questions. And that's where we stand up. There is no other way to stand up. In other words, we cannot look for somewhere else to put our feet if we want to stand up after we have fallen. There's no place else to put our feet except this situation. If we look for someplace else to put our feet, we will never be able to stand up in our life. We have to face our fundamental problem. You know, we can't turn away and try to address a more convenient problem. We have to address the problem that we have, not something that is easier. So we can only face our fundamental problem and find our inherent freedom with an empty mind. Empty mind. You know, the mind without judgments and discriminations. The mind that doesn't blame. It's limitations imposed by our daily life. No blame. So whether or not we find our inherent freedom depends on how we face our standing up. Depends on our bodhisattva mind, which is why we organize the retreat, Sesshin, which, by the way, is coming up in just a few days. Does anyone have a question?
Thank you for your talk, Les. I think if I understand correctly, my vision is not perfect. And if I go out and get glasses and put them on, the mistake is not trying to correct my vision. It's believing that by correcting my vision, that's what's going to bring me happiness.
Yes. Gaining better vision through glasses or gaining anything, any so-called improvement in our life, even gaining a collection of them, doesn't bring true happiness. You know why? These things are temporary and transient, and we can lose them just like that. You get glasses, vision improves, the world looks wonderful, and one day you lose your glasses. Where did the happiness go? Went with the glasses. So whether we have or cannot have or lose the various things in our life that make life more convenient, more comfortable, that is not what brings us freedom. It's bigger than that. Thank you.
I've noticed in the last year that I've been watching a lot of late-night comedy. And there's one theme that's bigger than anything else in that last year, probably what drew me in, is blaming something out there that brings me a certain amount of comic relief, I guess. I seem to enjoy it. And I was trying to figure out if that's the same kind of blaming something outside of myself, sort of focuses me, and it's a little bit of comic relief, but maybe it's also kind of going down the wrong path. I'm not sure.
It's okay, you know, for us to treat ourselves to something like that. You know, our lives can be very challenging and stressful and difficult, and something like comedy can bring balance, bring some relief, help us with perspective, remind us that we don't have to take life as seriously as we think we do. I think it's okay. Maybe even necessary. To see irony and things out of balance and be touched. Maybe later you can tell me what are some of the things you watch? Because I look for some of those things and I haven't found anything that I'm interested in. Maybe you can tell me what you like. Thank you. Oh, yes, please.
Yeah, I would like to know, the freedom depends on the restriction and restriction depends on the freedom. Is both are dependencies there? Because when I came inside, I want to make it very quiet, so I walked very quietly so that the freedom of the Sangha is not affected. So I came inside very quietly without disturbing. I restricted myself. So that restriction helped the people to have freedom to listen to the talk. So both has a dependency, I feel. I mean, the freedom and the restriction. So restriction creates the freedom.
So you placed a restriction on yourself and you moved quietly, mindfully, carefully, so you wouldn't disturb others. Because you were mindful of other people and their freedom. You didn't want to disturb their freedom. With the attitude you have when you choose to carefully walk quietly so as not to disturb others, this is freedom, your choice. And sometimes we restrict ourselves in very, very large ways, big restrictions, so that we don't interfere with others' freedom. And sometimes we even make big sacrifice and restrict what it is we would prefer to do for the sake of others. This willingness to give up our own preferences for the sake of taking care of others is a sure sign of a feeling of freedom. So you're right, giving yourself a little restriction sometimes helps us find our own freedom. And in places where spiritual practice is very serious, where there's a lot of discipline and a lot of rules and people take care of things very seriously, they are finding their freedom because they are restricting, they are giving up their freedoms to do what they want to do at any time in any place. And by restricting their everyday freedoms, they are finding their larger freedom. So you're right. We restrict ourselves a little bit, we find our freedom. Thank you. Yes.
So, this is one of these kind of circular argument questions. Is, and I thought about this a long time actually, since I was a teenager. Is true freedom not having the desire or the need for happiness? In other words, you're not always going to be happy. Sometimes you're going to be in a bad mood. Sometimes you're not, you know, sometimes you're going to be under stress. Sometimes you're going to have things to deal with, and you're not always going to be happy. And it seems to me like it's one of life's great ironies. The way to find happiness is to not need it. And a lot of people that I know who are not happy because they're afraid to be happy, because they're afraid of losing it. They're afraid that if I'm too happy, well, then I'll lose that, and then I'll be sad. You know, and so they're just never happy, right? So is it the case that by giving up that need for happiness, you actually find it?
When we can give up the striving for something that we call happiness, or give up the striving for something that we think will bring us happiness, just letting go of that striving, we can find happiness. It doesn't mean we should give up trying to have the things that make our life better, or improve our life, or improve our health. We don't have to give that up. But if it doesn't come, or there's some restriction in it, our true happiness is still there. Our happiness can still be felt, even if something doesn't come our way. So it's this striving too hard for things that we think will make us happy is the problem. And it's the striving we need to give up. Mm. So the little anecdote about your people who are afraid of happiness because they feel if they lose it, they suffer. This is a problem of wanting our everyday happiness to be permanent. And like you said, sometimes things go the other way. And that's life. That's life to be in this world. So the striving for permanency, or the desire for permanency in an ideal situation, as a feeling that's what will bring happiness, is a misunderstanding, because things don't stay permanent. You know, this people built their dream homes up in Napa County and thought they had it, and something caused a fire and they lost it. It's tragedies there, but that doesn't mean our inherent happiness and our inherent freedom has been taken away because of a tragedy. And this is what our practice is about. To find our meaning in the midst of those tragedies. That is a deep question. Thank you.
Sometimes I wonder if our unhappiness is often caused by the fact that we fail to appreciate the happiness that we have right here and right now. And I think that, you know, not seeing the happiness that you have, it's, you know, because it's never enough. You know, that's a small thing. It's not big enough. I think that also contributes to making us feel, you know, unhappy and striving to have more and more and more. But really, you know, if we just look at what we have, you know, a lot to be grateful for. So I think that that's the attitude that perhaps we're trying to achieve with meditation, is that. Does that strike you as being the correct way to look at it?
When we can turn our awareness to the fundamental situation of our life, which is we have a life. We were given a life, or life came to us. And when we feel gratitude just for that simple fact, that can be the foundation of our happiness. So even though the our everyday life has ups and downs, when we remember to be when we can remember to be grateful for having a life, that's the best way to cut through all the confusion. And we all share that. Somebody may have more money than somebody else, or better job, or more intelligence, or something. But we can all share the fundamental joy of having a life. Pretty simple. Thank you.
Is part of the problem maybe the discriminating mind? Because for me, happiness is being present for it and not thinking into the future. But once I label it happy or content, then the dualism comes. So unhappy comes to mind. So by giving it a name, it creates the opposite. You know, by giving it, there's an illness, so there's a medicine and all of that. So is maybe that part of the problem? By naming those things that come up just naturally in life, we create the other thing in our mind.
Yes. Yes. Yes, this labeling or naming of our situation is a, you know, intellectual process which we can dispense with and just feel, here's a situation, I'm going to take care of it. Without thinking, it's good, it's bad, I like it, I don't like it, it makes me happy, it doesn't make me happy. That just distracts us from the attitude that says, oh, this is my living right now, I'm going to take care of this. So when we put our energy into our present situation and not label it, there's deep satisfaction there. So that's right, we should resist putting too many labels on events of our life. Thank you.
So if we try to take care of some situation, that somehow involves very ordinary notions of freedom and happiness. It's like the difference between, well, when you want to take care of a situation as opposed to mess it up even worse, like you have to consider these ordinary concepts of happiness. And what's the relationship between that and the fundamental happiness that you were talking about?
What was the last part?
Let me think if I can phrase this better. Well, it seems, I'm not sure I understand it, but it seems very natural to me that somehow the fundamental, some sort of freedom or, I don't know, is somehow expressed when you take care of something. But when you take care of something, that's also very closely related to the much more ordinary notions of what's good and what's bad, and what makes you or other people happy or not. And now that I'm phrasing it this way, it's kind of hard to pose a question, but I don't know, is there, I guess, how does one make sense of this? Like, Your talks often kind of oppose the more fundamental notions of what it is to be and what it is to be happy to the more... your talks usually oppose them to the more ordinary notions. But I feel like there is also a deep connection between them, and I have trouble expressing it. I was wondering if you can speak to that.
Connection between ordinary happiness
and this more fundamental notion of the more fundamental freedom.
Oh. The usual ideas about happiness have to do with obtaining, getting things, physical things or emotional things. This is the usual idea of happiness, and this is the idea we promote in modern culture. You should get these things. Let me offer you these things. And I think the present problem that's come up about people's privacy being misused, so that somebody can figure out what they really want and then offer them that as a way of saying, this will make you happy. And so there's a company now that's in trouble because they let their information get shared. It's all about somebody trying to offer us something that they think we feel will make us happy, and we will buy it. It's very complicated. It's very complex. But having all these things doesn't do it. When we take care of our world that we share, when we take care of it together and help each other in that way, such as being mindful when you walk in the room when there are other people, when we take care of each other that way and not worry about getting something, then we find our happiness. Not in collecting things. So let's practice together and take care of each other and take care of the things we share together, and we'll find our freedom that way. Taking care is how we find our freedom. Great joy in that. It doesn't mean we drop out of society. It just means we have a bigger view of what our life is all about. Thank you.